Please welcome George Galloway.
Thank you, Andrew. Brothers and sisters, comrades and friends, thank you for the invitation. Thank you to the Stop the War Coalition for organizing this, what I am sure will not be the last meeting on Libya, and for the wonderful clarity of the arguments that have been put from the platform this evening. I simply say to Lindsay that the ability to be shocked at the BBC lies in direct proportion to one's age. And I have the same problem that she does. But we must never forget what we called them when Richard Sambrook sent out that infamous email telling BBC radio presenters that there were too many extreme anti-war voices ending up on the BBC, that it was then and is now the Bush and Blair Corporation. And I have been virtually weekly, sometimes two or three times a week, interviewed on Rupert Murdoch's Sky television, not for long, and a small voice in a sea of propaganda, but at least I have been on it. I have not, in the course of the entire Arab Revolution, appeared on BBC television. Perhaps I'm too extreme an anti-war voice for that. I've been getting lots of mail, some of it sincere and genuinely misguided, especially from Libyan people who have a special difficulty, as Sami Ramadani described in relation to Iraq, a special difficulty in deciding where they stand, how they must face these extremely difficult times for their country and their families back home. Some of the mail is abusive and hateful and emanates from what used to be called the Houston Manifesto types, the liberal imperialists, the so-called decent left, as they describe themselves obscenely. And there is another, let's face it, there is another sliver which has adhered to that section of the left, or at least they said they were from the left, which left us around the time of Iraq. A surprising number. But it's outweighed by all the arguments that have been put here this evening, and some, I hope, which I shall add. And Andrew was being too modest when he speculated that one of the reasons for the truly remarkable situation, that in the first few days of a war, with all bugles blaring, all Union flags flying, with almost all the media beating the war drums, with the correspondents standing at the airfields as these phallic multi-million symbols take off once again for foreign climes, in a country like ours with centuries of imperial baggage, that more people in Britain agree with the Stop the War Coalition than agree with the British government in just the first few days. And that's before picking up the point that Lindsay made. People begin to calculate, and it's not the most important reason, but in the same week that the condemned government's budget consigned hundreds of thousands of extra people to the unemployment queue, savaged further the public services in this near bankrupt country, which we're told can only stay one step ahead of Standard and Poor's credit rating degrading. A country that we're told has a worse economic situation than Greece and Portugal and Italy and Ireland. That's what the government spokesmen were telling us on the media this week. That in that country, how long has this been going on now? 10 days? 10 days at £5 million per day, just the British costs. in hurling these million-dollar Tomahawk missiles at people in North Africa. £5 million a day. That's £35 million a week. That's more than £100 million a month. That's more than £1 billion a year. And mark my words, and we were right on Afghanistan, and we're right on Iraq. We are not coming home for Christmas from this war, or the Christmas after that, as is clear from the pictures this evening of this faintly comic opera affair of armies charging one way, then hurtling backwards over and over again. This is a military stalemate in the making, and we will be dragged into a long-lasting and very expensive quagmire in North Africa if we don't persuade our people to step up their opposition into a demand that Britain should withdraw from this farce. The United States cost already, according to the Pentagon, is $500 million in 10 days. $500 million in a country with 10% unemployment, where people are being kicked out of their houses coast to coast in the United States, and where the economy is still on the floor. Does anybody think that if they win the war, they're going to shoulder that burden themselves? Or are they going to take it from the Libyan people, from the Libyan people's wealth? Of course they are. The Libyans are going to pay for all of this in more than one way. But it isn't just, as Lindsay said, the cost. I mean, when you begin to contemplate it all, and you see how absurd it all is, you wonder how even the sincere can remain misguided on this question. Sammy talked about the, and Lindsay did too, about the million dead in Iraq. It wasn't just that there was a million dead in Iraq. It wasn't just that 3 million Iraqis were driven into exile, many of them begging on the streets of neighboring countries, unable to return. It wasn't just the destruction of Iraq's infrastructure, the privatization of its oil and gas, and the handing over of Iraq's wealth to foreign companies belonging to the countries that quote-unquote liberated it. It was the breaking of Iraq into not one, but two, maybe three different nascent countries. The deliberate fanning of sectarianism to turn the people against each other, the better that we could rule them for longer and, if possible, in perpetuity. The same fate awaits the people of Libya. And it's not just the fact that this coalition of the killing contains within it leaders of countries with a blood-soaked reputation in that very region. The Italians, imagine, the Italians bombing Libya. The last time the Italians were in Libya, they were wearing the uniforms of Benito Mussolini and committing war crimes so base that only last year, Silvio Berlusconi, that friend of liberty, agreed to pay Libya 5 billion euros in compensation for the war crimes committed by the Italian fascists in Libya. France, imagine, France bombing, more than anybody else actually, France is bombing a country with a border in its south with Algeria, where until the early 1960s, when the Beatles were number one in the top 20, was massacring 1.5 million Algerians to try and maintain their colonial power in North Africa. It isn't just that. It isn't just that. When you begin to examine, as reporters keep putting to me, the Arab League's participation in all of this, and when you say to them, but the Arab League is a collection of dictatorships, most of whom are busily shooting down their own democracy activists in their own countries, and you're telling me that they're part of a coalition for something good,
in Libya. Saudi Arabia has joined the coalition of the killing. Saudi Arabia, our best friends, yeah, whom we've sold a mountain of weapons. Well, at last, they're getting a chance to use some of that heavy weaponry by killing fellow Arabs in Libya. And no one is asking, how can you be part of a coalition for human rights in Libya when your country is the unfreest country on the earth and you are presently, this day, shooting down democracy activists in the streets of your own country? Worse than that, Saudi Arabia and Qatar, and I regret to say Qatar, which has the biggest American military base in the entire world in its country, which we were sort of overlooking because we admired Al Jazeera and the important role that it was playing. Now, the king of Qatar has appointed himself the oil minister of liberated Libya and has been given the job in London 2 days ago of selling Libyan oil from the so-called liberated area on the international market in complete disregard and breach of international law. Who elected the king of Qatar? How can the king of Qatar, an absolute monarch, be a part of a coalition for democracy in Libya? It's absolutely absurd. Absolutely absurd. And I'm equally sorry to say this. If you go back to YouTube a few weeks ago, I was praising the Al Jazeera reporters in the audience for their coverage of the revolution in Egypt. But they're not rebels, you know, in Libya, according to Al Jazeera. They're pro-democracy fighters. Well, again, I make the point. Qatar is a member of the GCC, the Gulf Cooperation Council, not a single one of which is a democracy. How can it be that Qatar and the UAE and Saudi Arabia can invade and occupy Bahrain to murder democracy demonstrators there and yet be a part of this coalition for democracy, pro-democracy fighters in North Africa? The arguments are so many and so powerful that if we can get those arguments out, we can win the British public opinion against this grotesque and monstrous adventure. But my last reason for being against it is the same as all of my friends here. I heard the Secretary of State for International Development, I forget his name, Mitchell, this morning on the radio, say that Britain has been a beacon for human rights down the centuries. That's what he said. That's what he said. He clearly, plainly, let's say that he wasn't paying attention during his expensive education at public school and Oxbridge. Britain, as an imperial power, so had an empire so vast that on it the sun never set, mainly because God would never trust the British in the dark. But Britain's empire stretched, you remember it, those of us of a certain age, across so much of the globe, which was painted pink, and it had nothing, I assure you, Mr. Tatchell, to do with gay rights. It was just that faint stain of blood that we left everywhere that we went. Empire is about going to places, killing their people, and stealing their things. That's what empire was about when we were in our pomp. It's what empire is about now that we are a junior partner, and to our last breath, we in the Stop the War Coalition will stand against it. Thank you.